condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high.
Hello, welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have a... We've broken the two female rule on the board this morning. This is bad. S&P futures down 775. NASDAQ futures down 3250. Lou, what good are rules if you don't obey them? Just saying. We have Jay-Z, Jessica Zalewski, training, AV, although she did a pretty good job this week, Angelica Vlasenko, so we've got a lot of words over there, so it's AV and Jay-Z. Lou, you're supposed to be here, are you? Yesterday we had a lot of stuff going on in the market, even though it was very slow all during the morning, and then we ended up with the Fed announcement. And after the Fed announcement, the market was down as much as over, 211 points. We finished slightly up on a day as we came back in the afternoon. Lou, are you with us?
Yeah, there you are. How are you, Chief?
Doing all right. Need a little Lou volume, but other than that, we're good. So can you speak, Russian to Angelica?
Здравствуйте, доброе утро.
Oh God.
Доброе утро.
So how's his Russian, Angelica? Pretty good.
Pretty good pronunciation, actually. I'm surprised.
Yeah. Lou, I'm just gonna surprise you, but
I've been practicing Italian, unfortunately, so I'm starting to lose. I'm afraid I'm going to start to lose my. My Russian pronunciation, but my Italian friends say I speak Italian like a Russian. So there's a problem there.
This may totally shock you, but Angelica speaks very perfect English, better than me. We now have a commercial flying in here. She's having trouble picking up my South Side slang and interpreting it. Can you imagine that?
Anyway, Angelica, очень приятно. It's a pleasure.
We were driving in the other day, and I said, "How was work last night?" And she said, "Was fine." She works in one of the fine dining restaurants, and I said, "Any scratcho?" And she had no idea what I was talking about. I said,
"I'm not sure I do either."
I said, "Did you have scratch? Meaning, did you make any money?"
Dengue.
Yeah. So, but I should have said, "By the way, did you have a profitable evening?" I didn't quite make it there. So, what did you? How are things over there?
It's cold and damp. It was almost 90 here yesterday, or almost 34, 35, and but today I doubt if we'll get out of like above 65. It's a big cold front came down from the North Sea and. It's rainy and cold, and since I don't, I tend to walk everywhere or take a bus right now, since we're not renting our cars yet.
Are you in Italy, or where are you?
Yes, yeah, I'm in Bologna.
Okay, cool. So, did you get any of the stuff yesterday? Where your Prez referred to the Fed as gutless and something else, no vision.
Now, I was following what the remnants of the idiotic Kavanaugh situation, and then I started seeing the Trudeau blackface stuff surface, and then the GM strike. So those are a couple of things I want to talk about. But the fact that the president is bashing the Fed doesn't really mean anything to me, because I think he always bashes the Fed.
That's true. That is true. It's not really. He keeps getting new words though, new nastier words every time.
This is all business stuff for him. It's not he's not looking for this from an economic perspective. It's the next deal in 15 minutes or the next 15 minutes that he's worried about, not the next 24 hours.
Lou, I gave an example the other day of what I don't have to give it three times. He was kind of going crazy about how terrific it would be if essentially the federal government didn't have to pay any interest. Essentially, how much money he could spend if people gave him money to hold money. You know, so he was.
I think I saw that report or whatever. Yeah.
But I mean, to me, when somebody says something like that, it shows, and not just him, it shows an incredible lack of knowledge of the subject you're talking about. It's like saying, I'd love to have somebody cut my lawn for $10.
Well, sure. I mean, I'd love to have the meal that I had here yesterday, every day, but it's not going to happen, and it shouldn't.
Well, I mean, I'm saying it's like, but I'm saying the difference is with what you just said and what I just said is mine was a little more economic in the sense that if somebody was willing to cut my lawn for $10, like an adult person. That's a couple of kids in grammar school. If somebody's willing to cut my lawn for 10 months, $10? What would the rest of society, what would the economics have to be for somebody willing to show up with equipment and spend 2 hours on my lawn for $10? The rest of the world would have to be destitute.
He does not look at things that way. He looks at things from a business perspective, and I assume you've met people like this. I dealt with folks like this as clients on a regular basis, who, you know, when they had a business advantage, they pressed, and they pressed as hard and as long as they could, on the theory that A, you don't get anything if you don't ask for it, and B, if you are in a strong bargaining position, let's see how far you can push the other side. And I mean, we had. I can't think of the specific. Well, I can't get the specific example because it would be too revealing. But you know, I had a client that had a really good windfall on one of their projects. They got a huge surplus, and because they were flush with cash, they decided to go back in and start renegotiating a bunch of their union contracts. And, you know, the union's going, we'll go on strike, we'll do all this stuff. And the client said, yeah, go ahead. I got money to burn. I know your guys don't. So now we're going to try to rewrite this stuff. And the union, you know, the union started squawking. And I had the union lawyers screaming at me, you know, how can your guys do this, da 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 da. And I said, they can do it because the contract allows them to do it, number one, and because the economic damage that a strike or a wildcat walkout would impose is something they can live with right now because they've got a strong position. Now, whether it's smart, whether it's better in the long term, all that other stuff, I don't know. But I mean, that's the way I think the president looks at these things.
Lou, there's, as usual, when you and I talk, there's many levels to this. If you are selling a house to somebody or buying a house, and it's just two people that are never going to see each other again, and one of the lawyers messes up and adds something up wrong, and you have the person maybe has already sold their other place, and their stuff is in storage, and they're living in a motel, four people in one room, and all of a sudden you could put the screws to somebody, and you do, okay, you can probably get away with it. All right, so say you weasel.
I'm betting you that Audrey has seen that situation play out. I don't know how long she's been doing it, but I'll bet she sees that situation play out at least once or twice a year.
Maybe. You know what, Lou? I'm going to say something weird. that's not really a South Side attitude. It's much, you'll see it much more other places. You didn't even really see it on a trading floor, to be honest with you, that much. Some people you did, but not very many. But my point is that one of the, but my, well, he was a friend at, I'm sure he's long dead, at Pullman. He used to go around the world and teach people how to do big contracts, you know, roadway, bridges, those kinds of things. And he said, you never, if you strike the bad deal with somebody that you're going to have to live with, if somebody doesn't charge you enough and you think you screwed them, somewhere along the way it's going to bite you in the ass because they're going to realize they didn't charge enough and they're going to shortcut you on something. So, I mean, even with a union situation, that's probably somewhere in the middle. If you now have a 2-year contract.
It's actually worse with the union.
Well, if you have 2 years.
The union's not going away.
Yeah, I'm saying over 2 years, if every single time, you know, there's something bad happens in the plant and they look at their watch and go, see ya, it's closing time, and walk out and leave you with the mess. I mean, there's ways to get back at people over 2 years. Especially.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No. I agree. I would make this point to these clients. I would say, you know, you can't look at things in the short term. You have to take a longer view. And I'm not sure. I don't think the president does that. I think that's just part of his business ethic, is that, you know, he just basically, you know, he tells his lawyers take a hard line position when we can take a hard line position. And then I think he looks at this as everybody else having a shorter memory, as he does, in terms of these business decisions. You know, it's whatever happens on this deal doesn't carry over to the next deal for him. I really believe that.
But it's a very TV-ish sort of thing among people. You know, who was very much like that. Another TV star was your buddy J.R. Ewing. You get me on this one deal, and the next time I get you, it's all a big game. And it was all, I mean, that was a part of the thing, and I just try harder the next time. It's almost like an athletic event. You know, you kick my ass in handball, well, that means I go run for 4 days, so next week when I play, I'm in a little better shape, maybe I can kick you. It's a big game. And so for Trump,
the important thing to remember is, I'm not gonna hold it against you if you kick my rear end last week. And you won't hold it against me if I kick your rear end this week. And when we go sit down to do a deal 2 weeks down the road, I mean that's kind of the president's mentality. So that's why he says I got leverage. I mean I'm in charge of the United States government. We got the world's biggest economy. People are going to have to listen to us when we do things. As long as I've got that advantage, I'm going to push. And I think. You know, I think his motivations and his focus for a number of these problems is correct. I think, for example, China is a huge issue, and I'm glad to see him taking the actions we're taking, in the sense that we're causing China to try to reevaluate the way it's doing business. I'm all in favor of that. I don't think tariffs are the way to do it, but you know, maybe that's the only option.
But some fights,
we'll see,
though.
We'll see what happens with Iran.
But how do you like, you know? Since you were speaking Russia fluently, I mean, I would think that is bad of an agreement. Can you imagine him being president when they did SALT I and SALT II about what crummy deals they were? But the fact is, they managed the problem to a point where Russia ran out of gas, and it was way better than a gazillion people dying in a war. Even though every year he looked at it and said, this situation isn't the best. I'm going to say that the China situation has been bad for 50 years, and I'm not so sure it's worse now than it ever was in any one of those times. The fact that the way they do business is different, they like to steal people's stuff, but it seems like it's somewhat evolved, Lou, from where they flat out stole people's stuff to where they put it in the transactions that people were giving it to them willingly. Now, I don't know that, to me, that's a different ballgame than grabbing one Beatles album and running off 40 bazillion copies and selling them. I mean, my impression
is that they've continued to take and steal stuff, and it's been a huge issue. And that they've written into some contracts that they can get access to this stuff, but the vast majority of things that have happened with China have been the result of intellectual property theft or outright espionage.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is a lot of the stuff we care about them getting, it seems to me, not being a huge expert on it, they actually bought the companies, for God's sake. Why aren't we saying you can't buy anybody over here or anything?
I mean, we are saying that. Are you familiar with CFIUS?
The what?
CFIUS.
I've heard of it. But
Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S.
Well, I'm saying that would be my way to go. I wouldn't be throwing tariffs on stuff.
It was a pretty small ball operation, I think, until about 2014 or 2013 or 2014, and then all of a sudden, try to get a company, a foreign company, buying something in the United States when that U.S. entity makes anything related to defense.
Okay, well, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm saying that, but that's...
So that's really tightened down.
Well, I would absolutely make sense to that. And if we're complaining that our people can't buy stuff in China and they can buy stuff here, don't let them buy stuff here.
So in any event, I don't agree with the narrative that somehow our companies were saying, oh, yeah, you can have this stuff, because that's my impression is that's not what was going on.
Well, I know that the biggest one... That they ended up giving plans for a Boeing plane. Okay, I mean, a lot of people are pissed about that, but they're building the tail over there, and they're buying half the planes.
Right?
What?
The 737.
No, I'm talking about the 787 is the one they're building the tail for, right?
Yes. Okay.
All right. So they granted
that, but Boeing does that as a matter of course in a number of different places. And I understand that the problem is that we've opened up parts of our industry to them to allow them to use that technology, and it's been followed by a massive intrusion into our classified databases and industrial databases, as well as our universities. They've been engaged in a wide ranging, long game espionage effort against the United States, and we operated on the assumption that somehow, if we allowed capitalism into the, into China and into Russia, capitalism would gradually transform those economies, because their populations would want the wealth and the consumer goods and everything else that comes with it, and eventually they would start to normalize their despotic leadership. And it hasn't worked out that way. The Chinese maintained a complete fascist system in place while they liberalized their economy and allowed people to make money under the terms of that the government allowed. While in Russia, it went the other way. The government basically abandoned the economy. You ended up with this huge economic disaster of the 1990s, and now that led to the rise of a despotic government in Russia that. That is gradually working its way back to where the Chinese are right now in terms of its control over businesses. I think those were parts of our foreign policy. That was a long term goal of our foreign policy, and it's kind of fallen apart. So, I'm interested now in is what's playing out in the Middle East, where I think we have this kind of unholy alliance between Iran, a fundamentalist theocratic state, and Russia, which is just the opposite. Well, I shouldn't say just the opposite, because Putin's aligned himself with the Russian Orthodox Church very strongly. But an alliance between Iran and Russia to try to shut down the ability of the Saudis to pump oil, which of course bolsters Russia's export economy and gets them back to where they were in the 1970s and 1980s. Something that we were able to undercut with our fracking and the exploration capacity.
Lou, a couple of questions since you're our expert.
You look at that and say, okay, what are we looking at? Are they somebody looking at trying to drag us back into the Middle East?
What exactly was the start and where in the status of this Yemeni war? You can't. I'm looking all over. I can't find. I mean, it's not any. Well, I got to start doing like CAF does and get the London Times or something, but. None of this stuff is in any of the press here. Who's on whose side over there, and who's how long has that been going on? How many people are dead? What's that place look like?
Well, it's a disaster. That civil war. So I was in Oman in 1986 as an active duty judge advocate, and the Omanis were dealing with incursions by the Houthi rebels, who are a different tribal sect. Although they've aligned with the more radical elements of Islam now, but who were a different tribal sect from the Yemeni government that was in place and had the kingdom and tribal government that had been in place after the Brits left.
Well, do they have any? Do they have any wealth at all? Do they have any oil? I'm thinking not.
They're not part of that. They're not part of that Aramco Saudi alliance. So their civil war's been going on for a while. Well, the Houthis and the guys who are out of power right now have basically aligned themselves with more radical Islamic influences, and they're attacking the kingdom. And the Saudis are saying, you know, we're not going to allow these guys who we think are backed with Iran. Back now, Iran's come in. Are working with Iran. We're not going to allow these guys to prevail, because the real death match in this area. And again, I want to point out that the president has sort of tried to focus on getting us out of there. The death match in that area is between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and is it
mostly religious, or is it mostly economic, or both?
Divisions that go back, you know, 1,000 years.
Lou, is it mostly religious, or is it religious and economic, or both?
Now it's political, but again, under Islam, there's no barrier, there's no line between the state and the church. So Islam is a theocratic religion, and so the religious elements are inexorably linked to the political elements. So now you've got a theocratic state in Iran, a theocratic heavily backed state. Although Salman's been trying to change this in Saudi Arabia, but a theocratic state in Saudi Arabia that looks at, you know, the Iranians as Shiites and as usurpers, and this kind of tribal warfare has been going on in Islam, as I said, for more than 1,000 years. So the death match is between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Iran says, you know, hey, we're ascendant. We had our revolution. We can now push our influence. We've gotten hold of the eastern part of Iraq. We have some control in Yemen. We have our Hezbollah proxies in Lebanon. We're gradually drawing a ring around Saudi Arabia. And now the Saudis are trying to push back and trying to, you know, as Salman tries to secularize the country a little bit, and admittedly with a very, very heavy hand.
Well, I was in.
They're also responding to the Iranians.
You're gonna not believe me on this one, but actually, I was in church way back in the day, and not that I never walk in the door, but we had a guest priest at St. Bernadette's. You know, and you're talking about the mass with the families and the kids and the whole bit there. So the guy gives one of these very intellectual homilies, like you would get at, you know, like Notre Dame or someplace. He freaked everybody out. I remember him saying this day. He goes, "Wars have been fought for economic reasons in the name of religion for centuries."
Okay.
Which I think is probably pretty accurate, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, again, the history of obviously religion in Europe was theocratic. The kings were presumed to have the blessing of God, and so the church and the state were very, very tightly linked. It's only as a result of the Reformation and the separation of Catholicism, first with Luther and then with the rise of Locke and those people, as you began to break the church away from its stranglehold on the state, and that whole process, resulted in the modernization of Europe and the rise of the Western, what we call Western liberal democratic values. And those are coming in direct conflict with Islam, and with values of China and Russia, where the cultures are radically different.
Well, what are the different, and I guess I don't, it's obvious that there are people, a lot of people like what you're talking about, but I see out in Orland where Audrey lives, there's a lot of people I imagine are from Saudi, but I don't know, that are clearly holding on to their faith, yet I've never seen anybody assimilate as fast, and I don't see them trying to get any political power in Orland Park. They're just happy to be here and out of there. I mean, and want to be Americans as fast as possible.
I would say that that's great to hear, but it's a little bit of an anomaly, because what you see in Western Europe is a refusal to assimilate on the part of a large number of folks who are leaving that area.
Lou, I got a quick question. I'm not a Europhobe like you are, but we had somebody on the show a couple of weeks ago who was talking about France, and so the attitude there is, I mean, here in the U.S., if we have people from Saudi here, we want them to assimilate. We want them to become, well, I'm not going to say like you and me, because I don't know if I'd sentence anybody to that, but the point being, this guy, whoever was on here, I think it was a lady, she said, we only got 30 seconds, so we'll talk about it, because the French don't want them to assimilate. They only want Frenchmen to be Frenchmen. If there's no more work for them, they want them to get the hell home. I mean, they don't want the people there. I mean, it's a two-way street.
I would say that they would want them to assimilate, but they're not necessarily welcoming them to come in. But if they come in, they do not want them setting up Sharia enclaves in portions of Paris, which
I understand that,
or in parts of Oslo or Göteborg.
Well, what is so much different? Well, just hold this. Well, I'll lob this out. But what is so much different between that and in Chicago, 100 years ago, people set up Polish or Italian churches where they spoke the language in there, and until the kids went to school and became more American, pretty much stayed in their own neighborhood. SP Futures down 4.25, NASDAQ Futures down 18. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now,
right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Instead of telling me over the mic, they're yelling at me. Go. Interesting change to the procedure. S&P futures down 4.25. Nasdaq futures down 16. We got the Dow futures down 49. Over in Europe, we've got, DAX up 21.2%. FTSE up 51.7. They've been dragging, and now they've been, kick up today. Gekran, up 24.4%. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 83.4%, Shanghai up 13.4%. They were down yesterday. Hang Seng down 285, that's a full percent, so a little bit of a disparity there. Bonds, 10-year 1.76, virtually unchanged. The Bund minus 0.49, like it's been for a few days. Japan minus 0.23, which is sneaking lower again. It was down to minus 0.19 the other, like yesterday or the day before, so they're slipping lower actually pretty drastically. Oil up a dollar, so back up to 59.18, not over 60, but 59.18. Brent up 65, that's up a dollar 41, that's 2.2%, so the spread is 59.18 to 65, that's $4. Make that $5.80, so that spread has popped out 30 cents in 2 days. Natural gas, 262, RBOB, 168. On gold, we've got down 850, 1507. Gold's been going kind of wild here between 1500 and probably 1525, so it's kind of in a range. Silver down 8 cents, 1783. Somebody's doing traffic weather sports over there. Let's have at it.
Good morning, everyone. The time now is 6:36 a.m. in Chicago. Chicago's looking clear today with a high of 80 and low of 67. In Phoenix, the day is looking partially cloudy with a high of 102 and a low of 73. Baseball. The Diamondbacks beat the Marlins 5-4. White Sox beat the Twins 3-1. And the Cubs lost to the Reds 3-2. Finally, in traffic, there is one accident reported on the 3-state going south before Bentonville Bridge. Right lane is blocked. Expect up to 10 minutes delays. Chief?
I'm thinking the 3-state would be the tri-state.
Yes.
Yes. You know, it's okay. It's pretty close. Pretty good. Nice job.
Just hearing somebody talk about us losing to the Reds in a Russian accent.
Yeah. That's
Ukrainian.
Ukrainian. Don't call her Russian, for God's sake. She's Ukrainian.
Oh, Ukrainian. Oh, exactly. Yeah, my mistake. Well, no wonder she wasn't happy about my speaking Russian. My apologies.
There you go. So what about the Cubs? Turn out the lights. The party's over. Or what?
Oh, God. What is it with those guys?
Well, they're missing a bunch of pieces. They're clearly not the same team without Rizzo.
No, they're not, and they can't close it out. I'm throwing my hands up. I'm not going to talk about the Cubs. It's too frustrating, especially from over here.
Now they got four against. So they got to win.
Sports Link, and that goes back to this Trudeau situation that's just erupted in Canada. Well, first of all, the hilarity. I mean, the irony of it is just delicious. Because obviously the Canadians are huge on this whole, you know, cultural sensitivity, et cetera, et cetera. And now the Prime Minister, who's been sort of the poster boy for urbaneness and smartness and intelligence, now shows up in these pictures when he was a, you know, not a young man, not in high school, not in college, but as a teacher in blackface. Now, they're calling it brownface because I think they're trying to minimize the impact, but it's blackface. And, or somebody said it's Pantone 153 on the paint scale. But the point, and just my personal take on this, I don't care. You know, I mean, I don't, there's no indication that Prime Minister Trudeau has any issues with racism or anything else. So I really don't think this is something he ought to be pilloried over, except that his people have pilloried over a lot of other people on it.
Yeah.
But the point that I wanted to make was, you know, this stuff in sports happens all the time. We have athletes who, you know, have their high school Twitter comments dredged up and broadcast out like this is some big deal or some reason for clubs to distance themselves from them or not hire them or draft them or whatever. And first in Virginia. Now, the Virginia thing was even worse than Trudeau. The Virginia thing with the governor involved idiocy in college like 30 some odd years ago. And I just don't care. You know, it's just, I don't think it's...
Well, when did we...
got something else backing it up. And the same thing with the jocks. I just... But this is a thing.
Lou, here, I'm going to give you
your take on that because I mean my position is this is manifestly unfair to these athletes to have this done. Just and I think it's unfair to Trudeau too.
One of the jokes certainly in the city here where Chicago has been certainly a shall we say a hotbed since we've had every ethnicity in the world and we had quite a bit of racism, or if there wasn't racism, there was certainly, I wouldn't say hatred, but economic.
There's a very tough racial history.
It's very tough. I mean, there's no doubt. But I'm saying, if you listen to, our buddy Eric, who obviously is African American, and the interesting part is Eric will tell you, like if you're sitting there having a beer with him at the Tripoli, he'll say, how do all ethnic or black jokes, or white jokes for that matter, if they're told by black people, how do they all start? Now, the guy looks around him, shrugs his shoulder, and finds out, looks and sees if anybody's listening, right? Eric does it perfectly. He'll, all of a sudden, he'll look back, turn both ways, and see if anybody's behind him before he tells the joke, right? Which essentially has been... Now, that in itself is a joke, okay? However, the interesting part about it, Lou, is it bespeaks of a certain amount of common sense that when you're going to tell a joke like that... You don't want to put it on Twitter or your yearbook. Or are you some kind of moron to put it down on a piece of paper? Even our girl, I always liked her. Cokie Roberts dies 2 days ago, right? Cokie was pretty much a star on national TV forever. She was the daughter
of the Speaker of the House who was inserted by her father with his influence and contacts into broadcast journalism.
No, she was the...
She turned out to be pretty good, but that's how she got in.
Well, no kidding. I mean, she was the daughter of Hale Baggs.
Yep.
She's the daughter.
Right.
And a sister of Tommy Baggs, of Patton Baggs and Blow, which was probably the single biggest lobbying firm in Washington forever. Tommy Baggs, I knew very well, is a CBOE's lobbyist. And Tommy Baggs was an absolute master, Lou, that he would... If there was a big party... I mean, these guys know how to work the room better than anybody you've ever seen. He always had a drink in his hand. Never really saw the guy drinking much because he probably had five parties to go to. But if there was, when there's a big group of especially knothead old white guys in suits, everybody stands around like in a group of three and four people and talks pretty much. He would visit every single group. He'd wander in. He'd always have the drink with him. And if it was five older guys, he would tell some off-color joke. And if there was one lady there, of course, it wouldn't be an off-color joke. And he would wind up, but you would never see him put the off color joke on a Twitter or an email and send it to you. How are these people this stupid? I mean, that's what I'm getting to.
Well, first of all, in many cases, you're talking about high school, and in much of these circumstances, so high school kids, even in the age of social media, do incredibly stupid things, and so that's one side of it. The second side of it is, and I don't know what Trudeau was thinking of, except I don't think I don't think when he was a 29-year-old private school teacher, I don't think he had any mind that he was going to end up being in politics. And so I think he just thought this was something fun to do. But I would tell you that in 2001 or 2002, where that picture dates from, I would not have put blackface on because I would have thought it's inappropriate.
Lou, with all the lousy stuff I saw growing up, redlining, people bombing black people's houses that moved into the first person that moved into the, quote, white neighborhood, out of all the stuff that I saw and real estate companies that I knew were involved in that and the things that, you know, because my grandparents didn't move out of one of those neighborhoods, and that's where I grew up, was in the one or two white families that didn't leave, which was fine. I mean, the neighborhood was fine. I had no issues with it, but neither did they. But now what I'm saying, Lou, is I missed this whole blackface thing. The only time I honestly ever saw it was if some all-white school did like a thing of Huck Finn or something,
sure.
and the person was supposed to be African American put blackface on. That's the only time I ever saw it.
It's become some kind of marker for racism, and I don't think it's appropriate that it does. I mean, you had Ted Danson, for God's sake, back in the 80s, put on blackface for the Emmys or the Oscars or something. I mean, it's one thing if you are denigrating African Americans by putting blackface on, but to appear as Aladdin or to appear as a kind of costume thing, that's something else. Now, having said that, that Governor North photo from Virginia is nuts, because I think that actually has a Ku Klux Klan connection. They're trying to make a joke. They're trying to be funny. But I mean, there are some things that are pretty insensitive, but I don't think absent some other kind of indication that this is an indication of what your mindset is now.
Well, it could be. I mean, if that was your intention, I could see where it could get that way real easy.
Well, it could, but I mean, you know, a guy who does something stupid and dresses up in a costume in college, who shows no other manifestation of anything other than, hey, I like to have a good time or get dressed up in a costume, I mean, I don't think that's disqualifying.
I would
now,
say
if
you're
he shows up a, if he shows up
Lou, a Lou, hold that thought, buddy. We're going to go to break. Hold that thought. SP Futures down 450. NASDAQ Futures down 17. We're just warming up with Mr. Lou. Come back. We're going to ask him about cruise missiles that other people make, how good they are. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
So AV on the board. So we have a lot of syllables on the board today, and they're doing a good job. SP Futures down 4.25, and NASDAQ Futures down 16.50. Mr. Weber will be back tomorrow. I'm going to quiz him, Lou, on the tiebreakers for Major League Baseball. I don't think I've ever read anything so complicated in my life. All the million different tiebreakers. Anyway, I want to ask you a couple things. What the nature of the weapon?
Cruise missiles, huh?
Well, I mean, two things. I've been having spirited conversations with people regarding drones. I've seen the one you can buy for like $300. It flies around in the over the next door guy, your neighbor's guy, just to piss him off. And obviously, you see the ones the military have. But what kind of a payload do you need a drone to have to actually drop some sort of a bomb on somebody, or is it a drone kamikaze, which is sort of the same thing? And they mentioned cruise missiles. Are we talking about some German V1 rockets that somebody dug out of the grave, or are we? Are we talking the ones that Raytheon makes, or somewhere in the middle, or, I mean, what are the definitions of these things, and how capable are they?
Well, the drones and cruise missiles are actually sort of variants of the same basic system, which is an unmanned aircraft or aviation system that is either remotely controlled to fly directly in or autonomously controlled. In other words, it has its own guidance system. So, we don't know. I mean, the Saudis are showing pictures of wing segments that they say, you know, are indicative of the attack. That would indicate, I think, more of a cruise missile kind of thing. But a drone, you know, winged drone or light aircraft could be flown into one of those tanks. It doesn't take much. There've been a number of attacks in the Middle East, and you can pull the video up online of these, you know, store bought off the shelf kind of things you could buy for your home, that they fit with a mortar round or an NA tank shell, and then they just fly. It can 30, 40 pounds. It can carry the thing. It flies it up, and it flies along until it gets over a target, and then it drops the shell on the target.
It actually drops the shell. It doesn't fly into the thing and blow up like a kamikaze.
No, these things. The videos you'll see are coming out of the Middle East are them just dropping a mortar shell.
So they're
running away from underneath, and it hits.
So they're coming back. I mean, they're coming back. Hopefully, they're not wrecking them.
Yeah. So the idea is that if you're coming after these tanks, which I assume are fairly thick, a drone could be launched, you know, from pretty close. You know, a matter of assembled and put together locally, fly, you know, 5-10 miles, and then crash itself into the side with a 30-40 pounds of explosive payload to punch a hole in the side of the tank. That could do it. A cruise missile is a different animal. Typically, they're jet powered, and those things can be launched from ships. They can be launched from the ground. I guess you could probably smuggle one in, but they would be launched and they fly autonomously. Typically, drones are guided.
Cruise missiles, don't they fly like 500 feet off the ground so you can't catch them on radar? Isn't that the idea?
Cruise missiles fly substantially lower than that, and they can fly at a relatively slow airspeed, so they don't set off any, you know, noise alerts or anything, and they can fly, you know, 200 knots or something like that, 20-30 feet off the ground. They are programmed so that they will avoid obstacles, and they can come in and hit, you know, right dead center once they come in with terminal guidance. Or again, they can have terminal guidance with somebody actually flying them. That would be you know, a drone. So I mean, I looked at the pictures that we published. It looks like the tanks were all attacked on one side and hit at least once. Sometimes it looks like there were a couple of holes in one of them or two of them. So they were hit with multiple shots. We don't know where the vehicles were launched from. We don't know whether they were remotely piloted by somebody sitting in a control room somewhere or a van flying the thing in, or whether they were autonomous and released with programming and targeting. We don't know, for example, again, how far they flew. If they had been launched out of Iran or outside the borders of Saudi Arabia, you would presume that a radar system somewhere would have picked them up, but not necessarily. And so, I mean, there's a lot of empty desert there.
I imagine an expert could look at some cruise missile remaining parts and probably could tell you, based on the parts, what the range of that thing was, I would guess.
Not necessarily. I mean, what you could tell would be aerodynamics and aerodynamic performance, but range could be, you know, range it could be anything depending on the size of the fuel tank and whatever kind of engine it had.
Okay.
So, I think you're talking about, you know, I mean, presumably we know what kind of cruise missiles the Iranians are making or whoever backed them. We know what kind of missiles they're making or what kind of missiles they're buying. And, presumably we can look at the parts and say, okay, this came from Iran or this came from China or this came from Pakistan or whoever's selling them. And again, the targeting on these is pretty straightforward with a reasonably good sensor up front. You can put a video image into a guidance computer and say, okay, when you see this kind of a picture, you're going for this, you know, this side of it.
Okay.
And since they were attacking these gigantic tanks, those are relatively easy to distinguish on video, and so the system could be programmed to hit those things. But again, notice they were all hit on the same side.
Really, I did not notice that. Thank you for that.
Systems, whatever was coming in, they were coming from the same direction.
Well, I guess that would make some sort of sense, but I got a quick question, and I know you don't want to delve too deep in the Fed and the economics, but the issues this week, I mean, we had Draghi, you know, said we're going to throw out more money at people, and then he quits, and it leaves, see ya, which is interesting. Then you've got stuff going on here with the, you know, the cut, and we've got the president calling him gutless and all sorts of kinds of stuff. You know, but then we had these issues with the overnight, Fed had to issue these overnight repos this week. Lou, I don't think...
I saw that with the New York...
Yeah, but I don't think since Fed. Since I've been doing the show and I made the comment, I had the guy from the Board of Education, their fund on here, where I got all kinds of stuff that all I had was a bunch of rich friends. I guess that meant you. And you know, and I hung around with those kinds of people and didn't realize what, you know, people need these pensions, which is obviously totally untrue. But anyway, I've gotten more calls, I guess I got tweets, but Maddie sees those, emails and stuff wanting me to explain and have people, I explained it, I think, halfway decently yesterday. Tomorrow I'm going to do better with Carl Denninger here. Everybody's getting the sense that this is, the emperor still has clothes, but he's flashing a little. Everybody has the sense that finally, after pouring money into the system and not worrying about debt or anything, somehow or another, there's a problem in the system. My brother, who's a brilliant guy, president of PTI Securities, he says to me, something's wrong with this. This shouldn't have happened 3 days in a row, and these guys shouldn't be able to toss it away that offhanded. He goes, I don't know what it is, but something doesn't smell right. And I've got that from literally dozens of people. I mean, we had a couple cocktails the other night. I was like, all right, Chief, what the hell's going on? What how'd these guys screw up by $50 billion? I mean, it's I'm not sure. Maybe Carl tomorrow can help me out, but I tell you what, something's weird. But how can it not be, Lou, when your budget deficit last month was $200 billion, your rollover on your bonds where you went out to sell 70-some billion this month, and you only had 20 that are refinancing, so you got a $50 billion hole there. And you've got corporations paying corporate taxes. Evidently, when they deposit the check, this is from my guys at the Fed, the account that the Fed puts it into doesn't count as part of the banking system. So all those three things happen at once. How do you not have a cash squeeze? And is it a two-day event, or is it the harbinger of things to come? I don't know. I mean,
I don't either, but I do know that you and I have been talking about harbingers of things to come for 10 years.
Yeah.
And sometimes every now and then we keep talking about that, and that's because you and I came on, when the Great Recession was very fresh in everybody's mind, and we were terrified that we were going to see, another repeat of that, and we've been scared of that ever since, but it's never really materialized.
But the timing of something like that, Lou, is kind of absurd. I mean, you could, if you have a septic system and they tell you don't put certain things down the toilet, and yet you do once a day or once a week and you get away with it, everybody knows that someday you're going to have a problem with your septic system, but nobody can tell you the day. I mean, if things don't make sense, I looked last week that the European Central Bank now owns 375 billion euros of Italian debt, and they're just going out to buy more. Lou, I can't tell you when 500's a number, 2 trillion's a number. I'm just saying, I think you would agree with me, eventually that game goes. Where the eventually is, if I could tell you where the eventually was, I'd be very rich, and you and I'd be living in the Isle of Man someplace.
Oh, no, we'd be doing something else for a living. That's right. But yeah, I mean, my point is not to be optimistic. My point is just this is a game that I know I'm not qualified to play because we've been talking about it for years, and I have no idea.
Well, the only thing I can say with my experience is when I started the business, it was so obvious that the market was so low in 1980, yet it took 2 years for it to turn around then. Lou, have a good time over there, buddy. I look to see you one of these days. Thank you for all the answers to all these questions. I've been waiting all week to ask you. And whatever. Have a good time, and we'll talk next week. SP Futures down 450. NASDAQ Futures down 1775. Come back with Mr. Fari Hamzy. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's J-O-H-N at PTIsecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV and Jay-Z over there on the board. Angelica Vlasenko and Jessica Zalewski.
Good morning.
How about those for a couple of names, Fari? There's Mr. Fari Hamzy's with us. SP Futures down 350, NASDAQ Futures down 1550. Interesting day yesterday, Fari. We didn't like what our gentleman said. For a while, we're down a couple hundred points in the Dow, and then all of a sudden we... It turns out it wasn't too bad after all, and we came flying right back. So
The mid-cycle question that was bombarded from two or three different, that were lobbed over from two or three different news organizations, kind of gave everybody a pause, and that's what the market sold. But once that, in my opinion, is my decision. One, because I trade, you probably have heard me say this in the presser. Yeah, the press conference after the decision. Each question usually is a trade. So, but I was stuck. Unfortunately, I was stuck with a position larger than I should have in one account, and I was stubborn, and so they hammered me. I had to give up some because I don't want to get into near even close to a margin call. These things could get, become a what do you call it? Avalanche. Could be a snow avalanche. So, but then as that dark cloud passed, other questions came, including the independence of Fed. Boom. It was a rocket to the moon, and at that point, I didn't know how fast enough I had positions across different accounts. So, it was not a bad day, but it started horrible. I mean, not in the morning. Morning was fine. I made a few shekels, but just at the beginning of the presser, it became horrible, and then... it went beyond my expectations. We never thought, I mean, in our chats, we were discussing positions live. We never thought we were going to see, what was this level here? We're going to see even 79.03, which was the IB high. We went to 79.23 by the close. It was just unreal.
So. Yeah, I can't.
Those are futures, by the way, NQ futures.
I was just mentioning to Lou that I've had so many people calling me and so forth regarding these Fed repo operations. Mm-hmm. There seems to be somewhat of a nervousness as are these guys. I mean, it's one thing to say we're going to keep interest rates down, but in this day and age, for me to essentially show my age and say, at the end of the day, the Fed can control short-term rates in the short term. But they can't control long-term rates, which are inflation-related. And, are they starting to lose control seems to be the question. And I'm going to say the answer is probably no. But
lose control in which part? The front end or the back end?
Seemingly both.
Okay.
Because the demands for money last month were, with the $200 billion federal budget deficit.
Right.
And a bunch of other things seemed to have been pretty high. I mean, if,
right.
if all of a sudden.
Jay Powell didn't want to say it, but, you know, in so many terms they did say it and said, look, it surprised us. And that's not a good thing. You should not, as a Fed, I mean, as New York Fed who runs that, you should not be surprised. So they got, but they, he admitted that they were surprised by his size.
Well, but here's what I was mentioning a little bit yesterday, and I'll go on a little bit further with you, is everybody always asks, I mean, these questions that people ask,
mm-hmm.
and when you have a, when you have a refinancing,
mm-hmm.
The Fed goes out to look, you know, to borrow money. The Treasury goes out to borrow money.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the money gets rolled over from the last time, essentially, right?
Right.
So yeah. Everybody always asks the question.
That's what we pronounce it.
What if China got pissed off and didn't show up? Okay.
Well, that or let's say another way. Grampino is way out of his mind, and the tax cuts did not create enough GDP to pay for him, so we have a massive deficit now.
Well, which we do.
We've been talking about this, you and I, ad nauseum for at least about a year now, that, hey, watch out, because what? The tax cuts were 18 months ago, okay, or 19 months, or 20 months ago, whatever. We've been talking about this, that this will come to roost one day. And when you have that, I just didn't like the answer. They should not have been surprised, but maybe they're trying to stay out of the politics of it. You know, fiscal policy is not their realm, but they should have known, hey, we're running massive deficits. Grampino is not delivering. Hello, Trumpkins.
Well, the article...
Pull out your head out of the sand and look around. We're getting in more trouble slowly. And that's what these reports were needed, back to back. And he didn't rule out that we're going to do it again. Keep that in mind.
Well, when you... The interesting part, Fari, is this you know, this is my training in the industry. You got to be a little more rigorous than normal people are. I mean,
you mean me, you, or Fed?
I'm saying just in general, when people sort of have opinions. I give you a quick one. I was waiting for these couple of people to have a cocktail at the Series the other night, and there's a table next to me. And one
guy, you talked to the Series now?
Yeah, well, okay. You've been there with us.
Well, you're coming up with the world. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Where do you think we were? Tiny's Tap? I mean,
I'm putting your leg.
I know.
Yeah, well, listen, that place is, I hope they'll turn on the lights a little bit. That place looks like a...
No, it's all been remodeled. It's all modern now. So
the guy
at the table next to me starts talking about Michigan paying Army $1 million to come there and play football. You know, this is an outrage, and why we're doing that with our Michigan's money, and I should write the Board of Trustees, and this should be a letter to the editor.
Oh,
and I sit there going, I felt like going over and sitting down and saying, you big dummy, Michigan's making $7 million on this game. They're not giving Army a slice of the gate or anything. They're just writing them a check for $1 million. They're getting like one-eighth of the revenue. Why is that a problem? To me, it's a little light, right? I mean,
plus you have everything else that's sunk costs already.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I'm saying,
you're buying a new stadium. What I mean,
well, when people talk about the Fed and you gloss over how this actually happens. Okay, so let's pick a number. The federal government spends $100 billion more in 1 month than they take in. Okay, well, where the frig do you get it? You got to get it from someplace. You're going to go out and you're going to go out and sell bonds and get the money, correct? So that when you sell the bonds out there, I'm thinking that the current number is roughly 55%, I think, is domestic, and 45 or a little more comes from overseas. You're going to get some from China.
Actually, we're getting more domestic than before.
Yeah, well, it was over.
The only major holder, I don't know about the new money. Okay, that's what it is. Major holder outsider is really China, but they're not adding anymore.
No, Japan holds more than China, and Saudi's still a hell of a lot. Although they don't, their deal is.
I don't know if Japan holds more than China.
They flip back and forth.
Okay.
But, so
because I mean, China is over a trillion.
Well, in,
I don't
in
think
the
Japan is there.
I think China's more than a trillion.
From last I read, but I could be wrong.
But in Saudi's there, but I don't think Saudi's identified by name.
Saudis don't have that kind of money.
But they also aren't identified somehow.
They had it with everything. They
got their deal.
Fund.
Okay, but what I'm saying
is... they're cashing out a lot with prices coming down on the oil. They're in deep trouble, and they know it.
All right, well, roll with me a little bit. You're going to get it from three places.
Okay.
You're going to get it from domestic.
Right. Right.
Let's say 50-50, even though we both think that domestic is more than 50 now.
Right. Last report I saw.
Are you going to get it from domestic? You're going to get it from foreign. And failing that, you're going to get it from made-up money from the Fed. Correct?
Good. Yes.
I mean, mm-hmm. So if it's $100 billion,
they're monetizing it.
They're writing a check for stuff that's out there, and they're creating the money. The check clears.
They're demonetizing it.
The check clears. So that's what you're going to do.
Exactly.
So obviously, if it was just every time the federal government spent over $100 billion more per month, you went out and borrowed all that money domestically, you would suck the life out of this economy so fast, but they're getting some of it from overseas, and they're making up the dough. And they're making the money up.
So short-term borrowers are going to be in trouble. Yeah. They're going to be crowded out.
So clearly, if this goes on like forever and you don't get the growth you're talking about, whenever they start telling you this story about how they're going to lower taxes, but the economy is going to pick up so much that their tax receipts are going to increase.
That's what I'm saying is failed. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's ignorant. It's absolutely
ignorant. If it didn't, we would have a higher GDP. Why do we have such a high GDP now? Part of that could be the CEO's CapEx indecisions because they don't know what side Grampina will wake up from the bed and decide what. That's part of a problem. They've said that in a number of surveys. But that's a structural. You can't change it until next November.
Well, do you think that...
I mean, keep that in mind. We're going to have more of this.
Oh, sure we are. I think we're reaching a point
where... it's not a one time. And that's why he didn't rule out either, that this was our last time on repos. But we haven't had repos like in 12 years.
Well, yeah.
11 years, 12 years, something like that. So this is not... I mean, I'm not surprised your astute investors and traders have called you in and say, hey, chief, what's going on? Yeah, this is an issue you got to pay attention to. But there's a lot of detail. Average person doesn't get it. We had a discussion at our cigar bar down here. Now, mind you, let me give you the fair disclosure here. 95% is the Trumpkins. And they wouldn't even ask a question like that because they don't know how to process the answer. But all they're thinking is that everything is good. Everything is good. And they're just making fun of the Democrats. Hey, I'm not a Democrat, but... You can say whatever you want. But here, let's worry about the numbers first. Forget the politics. Forget the numbers. These numbers don't look good.
The two-step dance between the Treasury and the Fed, because the Fed clearly is not independent. They think because they're beholden to the people that put them there, and they're half of them are elected by the banks, and they're clearly not apolitical, right? So it's a two-step process between the Treasury and the Fed. Just like it is with over in Europe.
I think here's the distinction. They should be free from micromanagement and micromeddling from the political powers to be. Yes, they choose them. They get them through the appointments, the nomination process, and then get ratified.
Farhi, imagine.
Once they're in, they should be left free. Otherwise, you should have picked them anyway.
Farhi, how could you... Let me ask you this question. I'm going to get very detailed on you.
You bring in that idiot guy Moore?
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is...
Yeah, the guy who was on the Fox commentator. I mean, you bring idiots like that, yes. Then you are the puppeteer because you just hired a puppet. That's different. But you got somebody like Jay Powell, who maybe not be the most luminary in the history of our Fed chairs, like Volcker or Bernanke. But you got to leave them alone. You got to let them do things. But otherwise, you shouldn't have appointed them anyway.
Right, consider this for a second. I don't want to go too into the detail of this, but
okay.
They can't be independent. When I say that, first of all, I want them to be independent. I want the Fed to be independent. But they can't be because there is no such thing. I mean, you'll listen to people all day long, and my buddy Dr. J, unfortunately, has fallen into this camp a little bit.
He's a Trumpkin.
Well, but they've had no help from Congress, which is total BS because we're talking about $1 trillion a year deficit. We're talking about help, but the point being is if the Fed was independent and they just said we're not doing any monetary policy right now, we don't think we need it, and the Treasury, at behest of the Congress and the President, say, we're going to have a Keynesian plan. We're going to have a fiscal stimulus plan. Okay, so we're going to spend $500 billion on whatever, you know, new train stations, whatever the hell you want them to do. Where do they get the money? They have to go borrow it from either the population or overseas. Let's say the population. Let's make it simple. So you go out and you take $500 billion out of your citizens' checkbook and you put it into your own and you go out and spend it. What are you really gaining? All you're really gaining is the 10%, the civilian population might have saved, even though now nobody saves anything, because they can't. They got a credit card debt. But some people still do. I get it. You don't gain anything. So if the Fed were to say, you knock yourself out, we're not a party to this at all, there would be no such thing as fiscal policy or Keynesian economics. Because along with this, the Fed's going to say, well, we'll inject some money into the system to make it easier for you to borrow. And by the way, we'll buy some of the crap you're selling with made up money. You almost can't differentiate one from the other. So when people say a totally independent Fed, that guy is going to have to stand up to Trump and say, you know what? Knock yourself out. Have your trillion-dollar infrastructure program. We're not helping. Good luck with that. Do you think you can go out tomorrow and borrow $1 trillion from this population?
No.
So there is no such thing structurally or politically. There is structurally an independence here, but there's no political. If you were to say to your president, up yours on this one in the Congress, I mean, the place would be in chaos. Because you almost, there's I'm going to say there's never been a time in history of the world, however your central bank is set up, where the government went out with some kind of a spending program and the central bank didn't, quote, accommodate. Ever. Because right. I don't see how the thing would fall flat on its nose. Where would you get the money?
Yep. I agree with you. No, I agree with you.
Name me any other person who says that.
Listen, the bravado is high, but we're boxed in. That's basically where we are. We're boxed in, so.
Well, and the answer is, and then you have people, Draghi's essentially pissed away 4.7 trillion euros, and the solution is more.
Mm-hmm.
Another trillion, and we got this knocked. Well, what makes anybody think that another trillion is going to help out?
Did you also notice what Powell said? We'll never have negative interest rates.
See, now there's another thing for Powell. My only criticism of any of these people, and I'll include, I forget his name, so I can't even tell you if I wanted to, the chief economist of the Chicago Fed here. I talked to him for 2 hours one night. They got to get out of the limousine, Fari. They got to get out of the limousine.
Okay.
I'm going to say, right. For Jay Powell to say that.
What's the limo doing to them?
I'm going to say, Fari, in this country, most of the big banks, now in Chicago and other places, and if you look, you're going to find somebody that's got free checking and I get it, okay? But now I have free checking, but if I go to an ATM outside the system and there's not as many, it costs me $2.50. Okay, so.
Oh, Murray.
But I'm saying, my point is, if most of the big banks, if you got under $5,000 in your account, there's a fee per month, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, Mr. Powell, wake up. Get out of the limousine. 80% of the people in this country, and I could be wrong, 70%, 60, 50, whatever number it is, have negative interest rates right now. They got $5,000 in the bank. They got to pay for their checks. They're paying $10 a month. And if they use an ATM, they're probably paying there too. That to me is negative interest rates for savers. Okay. So I'm going to say your countrymen, the people that you are serving, are there now. Don't say you're never going to go there. You're there. Right?
Well,
for most people.
Yeah.
I mean,
but, you know, listen, 50% of this country, last survey showed, did not have $400 extra.
That's what I'm saying. Emergency. So, how many people are under the $5,000 max, which is it was at Harris, and I think it is at a couple of these other places?
I don't know. Obviously, the guy who's in the limo with it, I mean, I think Powell's estimated net worth was about $120 million on his financial disclosures. It's not going to be understanding everybody, but he won't understand billionaires either, but he's somewhere in the middle. But it's self-made. he worked his ass off, and he.
I like the guy. Well, I'd love to spend some time with him.
He's the best guy we have. No, as a matter of fact, I think he is a troubling issue. Okay, as a policy issue for Grumpy from Trumpkins. At the time that we probably need the best Fed guy possible, attitude and operation of somebody like look at this NQ taking off. Of somebody like Grumpino would not attract the best talent. Okay, look at, for example, DHS. Another example. Look how many acting positions we have just in DHS. I think we're gonna have challenges in front of us coming in on the money side shortly. And I sure hope that Grumpino is not there another term. Otherwise, we're going to have a blow-up.
Well, but
we're 2008.
We got to get somebody.
Yes, we got to get somebody, yes. One. And two, hopefully they can attract somebody a little bit more heavy-duty than Jay Powell. The problem I have with Jay Powell is the investment banker. Okay, that's what I do have a problem with that. That's Jay investment banker. But we need a heavyweight, like Ben Bernanke. Because we're going to have another issue coming.
All right, well, let's put...
It could be even bigger than 2008.
Let's go with dual heavyweights.
Okay.
You and I drop in there.
Oh, please.
Look at the cards we're dealt.
I mean, I know you're being facetious, but not me.
No, but look at the cards...
You're welcome to give it a try, but it's not easy.
But look at the cards we're dealt. We've spread so much misinformation.
I hear you.
We're driving in yesterday. I'm listening to News Radio 78, who usually is pretty good, and they've got a thing about who benefits and who loses on interest rates. And they said the losers are savers. Okay, duh. Benefits are people borrowing, people with credit cards. And I almost slammed into a light pole driving. Wait a minute. Does anybody think today that they're getting an email from their bank if they don't have a credit card balance, the rate went down?
No, please. It's like, what do you call it? Did you see the rate? The gasoline prices come down?
They will in a week.
Half is restored, and they think the other half will be restored by end of a
month
by Saudis? No.
You know what, Bob?
I put gas in last night, and it's probably the highest I've paid in a long time in Florida.
What'd you pay?
He's supposed to have cheaper gas than anywhere else. Yeah, but it was one of the highest ones I've paid.
What did you pay?
Now, my tank was a little bit low. Okay, I grant you that. And it's a big tank, but I was really surprised by the amount.
What did you pay?
Oh, I don't know. It was like, I don't know, $75, something like that.
I'm saying, what was it per gallon?
Didn't take that much of a
Was it over $3?
It was definitely over $3. It was like $3.12 maybe.
It was
a premium. It has to be a premium, so it's $3.12.
Well,
I think. Was $3.1 something, okay? Let's say under $3.20. It's not California. I know it would be cheap.
You know what? Our Bob is up.
This is Florida.
You know what? Our Bob's up since this whole thing happened in a week.
What?
It was 154. It spiked to 179. Now it's back to 165. So if your gas price, you're going to get a surge over this week. But in 2 weeks, if it's more than a dime over where it was, somebody's hosing you. So you got to get premium gas.
You think more the people who locked rates yesterday? Or day before yesterday, we'll get a better rate from the mortgage companies today? No.
Speaking of who's bigger, Fari, how big is your gas tank?
25.
Mine's 42.
Well, mine is a sedan, senor.
All right.
What are you driving?
My big Secret Service Suburban.
There you go. That's how you're going to fit in. You're the big car. You're a big guy.
Well, it's nice. Well, I'll tell you,
Mine is comfortable. Me, Tico, a couple of blondes.
Oh, God. All right, so
hey, welcome to America.
Now, what is the...
Why do we work so hard?
What is the market...
You can absorb everything.
Is there a chance of a horrendous fall like last fall, or are we going to hang in there this year in the market?
What do you mean, hang in there?
Well, last year we got clobbered in the fall.
No, late fall.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying it's... I mean, September has not been a bad month. September is usually our worst month.
Yeah, December was actually one of my best months because I was short heavy. By then, it was very clear to be short. But it was a little bit touch and go in October and November if you got a chart. We went back and forth. And then, of course, the tax selling and the fact that nobody was around, the thin market added. Some of the stuff I've looked at, they're looking at next couple of weeks as a tough period. Near the end of September going in.
Why
going to Russia?
Why is that?
So, we'll see.
What's the reason? What's the rationale for that?
Just the way charts lining up, the fact that we're kind of overbought and not enough much impetus to go up. Yeah, that's one. The other one is the underlying current, exogenous and local, the national politics issue, not local, national politics issue. So we'll see.
Well, it seems to me
listen,
the
listen, if we get into a some sort of a skirmish in in the Persian Gulf, these numbers are fantasy where we are.
Well, yeah, it's a.
Oh yeah, everything will evaporate very fast. So.
What I'm sensing, and again, I can't be any kind of a timer because when I started the business, I thought we were going to rally, and we did, but it took 2 years, or actually.
Well, I'm not that good anymore. I'm only number two now.
All right. What I'm saying, I'm getting the sense that the Fed has.
My mom would say, "Now, Fatty, you have something to look forward to."
Yes. Yeah. My sense is the Fed is having to do more and more just to get to the same place. And these repos are kind of an indicator of that.
Could be. Listen, their hands are tied, and we're dealing with a very irrational Washington. So, either on either end of the 1600, either end of Pennsylvania Avenue. Part of it is the demagoguery that's going on. I mean, you can't even have a rational argument with anybody anymore.
Is there any chance that the
Obama was bad or Grumpino is bad? You know, there's no. Nothing in between. So,
is there any chance of us finding a rational person in the middle? We've been blessed before. Washington, Lincoln, Roosevelt. Are we stuck this time with nothing like that? It looks like it.
Well, I don't know. Listen, we got tough issues going forward. And I think part of our problem also, these are news diversions. We really need to take care of our own house first. We rarely do that.
Well, it's
that's because of most of our problems are that our own house here.
All right, Fry, we'll talk at you next week, buddy.
SP futures, have a good one, sir.
SP futures down a buck, NASDAQ futures down 675. Come back, we're going to have Mr. David Animal tell us what the charts tell us about the market. The charts. Be right back.
Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it is time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for
stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, I don't know if I stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howe. The ladies, the two female rule is broken on the board today. We have Jay-Z and AV doing a nice job over there. SP futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures down 650. Dow futures down 9. We've come back to just about unchanged. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 32.2%. FTSE up 42.6%. CAC around up 28.5%. Over in Asia, we've got a little bit of a mixed bag. Nikkei up 83 points, 0.4%. Shanghai up 13.4%. But the Hang Seng's down 285. That's a full percent. Bonds 1.77. The Bund is minus 0.49. Japan minus 0.23. We got oil up again today, up a big move today, up 2%. Dow 30 to 59.41, not back over 60 like it was earlier in the week. But Brent up $1.77, 65.37. Arbob gas, I'm sorry, just so far it was 165, it's 170. But still, it's not up that much. So the idea that your gas should have gone up like 50 cents is a little rich. Should be up about a dime. And we've got gold is down 590, 1509. Silver, 1790, that's down 1 cent. Is everyone traffic, weather, sports? Let's do traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 35 minutes past the hour. Chicago is looking clear today with a high of 80 and a low of 67. Phoenix is looking partially cloudy with a high of 102 and a low of 73. Baseball. The Diamondbacks beat the Marlins 5-4. White Sox beat the Twins 3-1. And the Cubs lost to the Reds 3-2. We got a stall reported in the right center lane on Kennedy going west. Also a new accident on the Dan Ryan Expressway going south. So expect the traffic delays up to 5-10 minutes. Overall, the traffic volume looks busy on 90 East, also Eisenhower going east. Chief?
Doesn't sound so horrible. Traffic. Not as bad as some days where it's, I turn back if I were you. Do we have David?
I'm here.
David, how are you?
I'm fine.
Evidently, no, we don't need any more of those stinking repos, but I guess they had to do some more repos this morning. Just came out, I saw it. Of course, if you were part of the repo thing, you'd already know that. But
right.
But, you know, only
The Fed hadn't done it for a while, and evidently just, I guess, Japan bank holiday and something having to do with corporate tax payments or whatever, the liquidity wasn't there. And so rates shot up, and the Fed wants, you know, the overnight rates to be in line with Fed funds, obviously, and so they injected the liquidity.
My friends tell me that when David Andelman writes his $1 million check to the IRS that he does every year, that it's going to come out of your bank account, but the deposit there, it's not at like a treasury account at Chase where it goes right back in the system. It actually does come out of the system. And obviously the Fed has to make up for that by putting money in, you know, on the whatever.
And so maybe that was it, because evidently just a whole slew of corporations had big taxes to pay.
Well, but also there was the Treasury went out and made a borrow an awful lot of money, and not,
right.
and not a lot of those people rolled it over. So there was a $50 billion, $54 billion funding shortfall. So, I think we're at the spot here, David. Considering we're fighting with China, whether we're right, wrong, or in the barrel, I'm going to say we're mostly right. But the tactics I don't agree with. But the idea that you know, some of the stuff had to be addressed, whether it had to be addressed this week or not, when it's been going on for 50 years, is another story. But anyway, there's another question. But I think we're reaching the maybe the end of the rope here. Where, I mean, given what I see the economy doing, the idea that the Fed can run out every month, or the Treasury can run out every month and grab $50 billion out of the population at 1.5%, I see that without the help of the Fed, I think that game's over right now. If the Fed wasn't buying half the stuff,
I wouldn't know the mechanics or the way everybody sits. And I would tend to agree with you, although when there's negative interest rates, you know, all over the place, you know, in central banks, and presuming the Bank of Japan is open like it was not on Monday, you know, if I have negative interest rates and all of a sudden I see an opportunity to get, you know, the equivalent of 1.5% overnight from the Fed, if I'm Bank of Japan, that would look attractive to me.
The question, I guess, and maybe, you know what, I don't want to find out on one day, David, because I have a feeling it's going to be a bad day. I don't want to find out where those European interest rates go if the European Central Bank stops buying for one day. They won't be negative. Because
you're probably right.
Because you know, nobody would do that.
Japan's all bought up in you know, the 25 largest companies with equities, they may not have the money even if the interest rate is attractive.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in at negative, you're in at negative. I mean, you're
right.
Not getting out. But I'm saying, would the price of that bond, if they're not buying it, who's going to buy it at that price? I mean, except for
right.
a central bank. I mean, clearly, they've got 4.7 trillion euros worth of the crap sitting in the vault over there in the
right,
balance sheet.
No, I get it.
I mean, you're not going to buy it for your clients. I'm not going to buy it for mine. Let me get this straight. I mean, we don't necessarily charge a fee for a lot of the people. We do for some at Wall Street Advisors. But depending on which program you're on here. But the point, I mean, what if I charge somebody even 0.5% a year and I say, Joe, I just put your dad in these 30-year bonds, so I'll make 0.5% for 30 years while the money sits here, assuming I last 30 years. And really, how much you get? Well, we're not getting anything. We're paying them. Let me get this straight. I'm paying you 0.5% to pay the government for 30 years. Yeah, it's the best I could do. I can't imagine that conversation, David. Could you?
No.
And yet, there we are. And we've got intelligent people, and we have people that are in elected office saying, what do you mean these negative interest rates are a good idea? For who?
Yeah, right. it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
What? How do you? We came to bounce back yesterday, and now we were down a little this morning, and we've bounced back again. We seem to be in this volatility has dropped like a rock. I mean, I got the VIX down to 14 from 20. It's still not, you know, like 11 or 12, because 14 is slightly elevated, but it's not horrible. All of a sudden now are we back in this everybody's got everybody's back sort of thing? I don't know that yesterday said that.
Yeah, that last hour rally was amazing to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, not even recovering half the losses, because it's, you know, talk rather than policy, but to recover all of it and go higher when, you know, the one adjective that I would say that, you know, Powell's speech, you know, if you had to assign one adjective to his speech, I would use the word reluctant. They seem reluctant. Maybe that's an adverb rather than an adjective.
I thought there were maybe it was correct me if I'm wrong here, I saw the part where we were down 200 when he was reluctant to lower it even the quarter without giving anybody the bone that, don't worry, a month from now it's going to be zero. We went south, and as soon as he brought up the part, we're willing to be aggressive, even if it meant like alternative asset purchases again, which means QE4. As soon as he said that, that's when we started rallying.
I guess.
More money in the system.
You know, yet he said they did dependent, and the voters, the Fed voters are split, and I don't know. It didn't sound to me like October or even December are, you know, necessarily bankable.
No, and I think the ability to do what they're doing is what you and I have been, you know, we've been talking about it for so long, and Lou is absolutely correct. It's been a long time, and nothing bad really has happened except for last quarter or last year. But, I mean, I think most of us think that when, you know, we would have bet and we would have lost, you and I. Fortunately, we didn't do that for our clients. We would have bet that no central bank could own 30% of ETFs without causing massive, you know, consternation and discontinuities in the system. Yet somehow or another, Japan has done that, and it really hasn't caused a major problem. Now, they did it gradually enough, or they did it sneakily enough, or whatever they did, but the fact is it didn't. But I'm still on board for saying they're not going to get to 100 without causing a problem. Now, whether that's 38, 39, or 40, you know, I have no idea. It's, matter of fact, I swore I'd never do this in life, David, but I always have to kind of tell another story that gets you to the same place. I was in the Tripoli Tap one night watching a Cub game, and this guy sits down next to me, and it turns out he's a guy who, they were doing some rehab on the L-tracks, okay? Now, for those that don't know, the L-tracks are all, they're a riveted structure. They essentially have the same structure as the Eiffel Tower. They're all metal, beam and post, and they're all riveted together. And, I mean, if you look at the history of the L, where every iteration of CTA cars, because I worked on one of these bids, weighs a little bit less than the one before, and initially they actually had steam locomotives, you know, not the size of the one you see on the Union Pacific, but they had steam locomotives on the L before they were electrified. So the thing was designed for cars a hell of a lot heavier than the ones that are there, correct? Obviously the people weigh the same, a lot, but I mean, even if the people
weigh... A little heavier now.
Well, even so, you get less on there, so I don't know that you...
Right.
You're in essence gaining... So I said to the guy, I said, and he goes, you know, some of this stuff is pretty worn out. I said, okay, but everybody knows that since this was designed essentially for steam locomotives, that it's over-engineered for what's there now. And if you're missing a couple of rivets, you're probably okay. He goes, everybody knows that. He says, but not one person can tell you whether if two are missing, you're okay, three, four, or five, or ten. Nobody can tell you what the number is when you lose the next rivet when you're in trouble. It's right. The exact same thing we're talking about. I mean, we think that if Japan owns every stock in the country, it's probably going to cause a problem, right? I mean, you're not going to have any market anymore. But now whether they can make it to 42 or 53 or 62 before people wake up and say, what the bleep is this? I don't know, David. But obviously, I never thought it was going to be 35.
You know, I'm not so sure that just because the Nikkei is held together with deficits, with, you know, lower... I'm not there, and I haven't been there for more than 30 years, so I can't say. But my kids have been there and whatever, and I don't think the standard of living there is what it once was. They've obviously slipped from number two, you know, in world GDP to a very distant number three. I'm not so sure just because they own whatever, 25-28% of the 25 largest companies, that, and then the K is held together, that you can say all's fine. So, you know, if they up it from, say, 27% to 40, it's okay. I don't know that you can say that.
Well, when I say okay,
I don't think it's that good there now.
Well, but I'm saying you and I, then now you bring up another subject. What's the target? I mean, you and I happen to think that what's happening now with Savers getting basically their ass beat, and people with massive interest payments on credit cards and income not going up. You and I can point to 50-60% of the population that probably isn't progressing, if at all, rapidly enough to keep them going with inflation. Okay, you and I can point to that and say that's our benchmark because you and I happen to care about those people and happen to look at it as a country. You're only, in a lot of ways, you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? But now, if you look at the market, you're going to say, "What's that chief idiot talking about? We're 1% from all time highs. Everything's great. Look at the labor numbers. Everybody's working, even if it's $10 an hour. Everybody's working. Look at the unemployment rate. Well, what about all the people that have left the stuff? We don't look at that column. Okay, don't look at that column. That's a bad column. But look at the market and look at whatever. Look at Google. Look at Amazon. I mean, look at what's going on there. What about the stocks that don't move? Don't look at those either. Just keep looking at the market, and everybody's okay.
And that's the problem. And, you know, I was waiting for a checkup last night at a doctor's appointment, so I picked up a Time magazine, and they were showing this real barbell effect where, you know, percentages of people, and I don't even know how they defined it, 50,000 or whatever, middle class, upper class, and lower class. And, you know, lower class has risen by about 6%, and upper class has risen by about 6%, and the middle class has shrunk by about 9%. So it's this barbell effect where there's more poorer people, more richer people, and fewer in the middle. Everyone's getting squeezed out of the middle. And while I am not for government, whether it's taxation or anything else, to redistribute wealth, there is that situation that you have to recognize. And I would just guess, with negative interest rates and everything else, that the situation is worse in Japan. And I don't think, especially on the weighted indexes, like, you know, well, all of ours that we pay attention to are weighted. Unless you look at, you know, an ETF with an unweighted where, you know, you take 500 stocks or whatever index you're choosing and make them all, you know, equal weight, you weight it by capitalization, you weight it by price, you can't sit and say, oh, the indexes are 1% from all-time highs, because they're not. If you take those five stocks, you know, basically the FANG names and Microsoft, you know, out of those weightings, they're far, far below. Far below.
Yeah, but no, but that's not good radio or TV, David.
But you know what? You and I and everybody else in PTI and everyone else somewhere else has this and say, hey, geez, why is my account not at, you know, at all time highs?
Right.
Well, were you gonna buy 1,000 shares of Amazon at $1,800 a share, or 1,000 shares of Google at $1,200 a share? No, you're not capitalized like that. Well, then you're not going to have the returns that it looks like on the NASDAQ.
What everybody's being taught to be, most of our clients at PTI, and everybody's got, you know, everybody looks, here's what they hear on TV, but as you know, I do some subcontract work for other, where I do the Protected Index program for people who have clients that want to do it and they don't know how to do it. So I subcontract that from other funds. And it's interesting, but I'll talk to some of those clients, David, and it can be astounding where people will say, I'm up this much, but the NASDAQ's up this much. Well, yeah, but you didn't want to be in the NASDAQ.
Yeah, they hear is the headline, or the Dow, where it's price weighted.
And somehow I'm being...
Caterpillar and Boeing are down, the whole index is down, and if they're up, the whole index is, because they're weighted according to price.
Well, I would say that 3-4 years ago, David, maybe five, when I put people, certainly 10 years ago, when I put people in the Protected Index program, most people wanted to be slightly overweight oil. So maybe if they had $500,000, we'd put, you know, 450 in the Spiders, and we'd put an extra 50 in the XLE, which means instead of 1/9 oil, which there were at the time, there were 9 little Spiders that added up to the big Spider. Now, since they broke the XLF up into the REITs and into the banks, there's actually 10, right, I think?
11.
There's 11. But if you do all of those, they add up to the big SPY. But if you wanted to be, to accent an area, say, healthcare, all you would have to do is, if the number was, $1 million, not that everybody has $1 million, but the number was $1 million, you would say, okay, put me $900,000 in the Spider, which is a full S&P, and throw me $100,000 in the XLV. So now, even though they're not all the same size, roughly, instead of being 1/9 healthcare, you're 2/10. So it's a way of, a rational way to accentuate if you wanted to. I mean, I don't really recommend that for a lot of people, but sometimes people, especially if you like, dividends, a lot of people like hanging in the oil patch, you know, that kind of thing, or if you like, the financials, you might do more in the XLF, you think the banks have lagged for 3-4 years and they're going to catch up. There's a lot of reasons to do this, but I'm saying it's very easy to do if you want to.
Right.
Okay. But I would say 5 to 10 years ago, if anybody picked to accentuate anything, it would have been the XLE and the oil patch. And yet in the last 3-4 years, God, talk about the skunk of the market.
Yeah, it's dropped to like 4.5% of the S&P 500.
Yeah, and if you had, God help you, if you had Schlumberger, 70-something down to 30, where did it bottom out at, 31, or we hope it bottomed out at 30. I mean, these stocks are, they're so dead, they're not, I mean, right now they might actually be a buy here, David, but, I mean, if you're a long-term hold there, boy, you know, you're calling your broker and say, hey, how come I'm not doing as well as the NASDAQ? Well, because you're the one who picked the XLE 8 years ago. What do you want me to tell you, right? I mean,
right.
But it's very easy. I know this year I put a real lot of money to work in January, and I'm going to say I did half Russell and half Q's. Boy, talk about different performances there, David. How do you – I mean, you can
and,
say
– And yeah. Then the rotation the last couple of weeks,
yeah.
The Russell was what you leaned on, and all of a sudden it's the star.
Yeah, but it's not going to catch the Q's this year. I don't mean this calendar year.
Who knows?
Well, it might.
The move between the NASDAQ and the Russell over the 2 weeks ending in August and beginning in September was literally historic.
Oh, so it was unbelievable. Yeah, the Russell, the IWM is the one you trade. It's the ETF.
Right.
I'm going to say it was under 150. Absolutely could not get out of its own way. We were selling calls in there, and you know, the money we're making is by selling the calls because the thing's going down. We made money right. A few times on the puts back and forth, but by and large, it was a clunker. It wasn't doing anywhere near as good as a QQQ. All of a sudden, it goes from like 140 and a half to 155 in like 3 days.
Right.
It hadn't done that in 3 years. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah. It makes it difficult to manage the option piece because you don't like to sell calls in the hole. Yet if the thing isn't going anywhere and you don't sell them, you know, it's like, you know, the XLE, same thing. I mean, last week, the XLE has not gone anywhere, and the volatility has been kind of low. And I looked to sell calls for my people, and you know, hey, I'm going to sell some calls in the XLE. And all of a sudden, I look at them, David, and they're like 30 cents. And I go, well, what the hell? I can't get really fired up about selling anything at 30 cents, right? Or 25 cents, or 20. But then it's 8 weeks later, and every other week you could have sold them for 30 cents, and you sit there and go, I could really use that $1.20. Because this thing's not going anywhere, right? So then you do the math and you say, well, if I can get 30 cents twice a month, you know, for 12, well, hell, I'm up to $7 or $8, you know, bucks, in which case I still can drag, you know, 5, 6, 8% out of this thing because I got puts to can. I mean, I can at least do something because it doesn't look like it's going anywhere. Then all of a sudden you sell the calls and you wake up in the morning and go, somebody's attacked the Saudi oil fields, and you go, oh bleep. You know, what did I sell those calls for? I mean, this market right now is not easy to trade. I don't care who says it is. It is not.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, folks, and with all due respect, and I love my clients and I cherish them and whatever, and I work very hard for them, but you know, the tendency is that they got their own jobs, their own professions. The market, it's supposed to always go up. And, you know, let's listen to the 6 o'clock news. Oh, you know, the Dow's up again. You know, oh, the NASDAQ's 1% off all-time highs. You know, as I said, my account should be 1% off all-time highs. Or maybe better if David's sharp. Well, you know, fine. Send me $10 million and we'll buy, you know, the thing and Microsoft, and then you'll be 1% off all-time highs.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure. But then if you ask somebody, is that where you want your money today? The answer is no.
No.
So it's, I mean, expectations are you know, but right now, everybody looks at, quote, the market, and yet there's all kinds of, I would say, David, it's sometimes in my career, it was as easy as, in looking back on it, is when the market started to move up, you just looked around for the stocks that haven't moved yet, and you bought those, and those went the next week, and you were a genius. Now that doesn't happen. The ones that are out of favor stay out of favor seemingly forever, and then when they go back in favor, they go back in one day.
Well, look at Intel.
Yeah.
You bought any semiconductor equipment maker, anything. You know, AMD was the dog for 20 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, whatever, with unique, innovative, you know, chips or whatever, you buy AMD, you sell Intel. Buy AMD, you sell Intel. Then all of a sudden, it catches two brokerage upgrades, and, you know, a stock that hadn't moved $2 in 4 months moved $8 in 5 days.
How many years did AMD stay under $5? About 20?
It was unreal.
It was absolutely.
If someone bought a laptop with an AMD chip, you looked at them like, what the heck? It's probably, the chip's going to probably blow up in 2 days.
All right, David, we got a dash, but SP Futures now up 475. NASDAQ Futures up 14. I'm thinking we have an up day today. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.